It's time for ESPN Las Vegas legal insider Justin Watkins with Battleborn Injury Lawyers, only on ESPN Las Vegas and ESPN Reno.
We are at the home of Battleborn, and this hour every day in Northern Nevada is brought to you by Battleborn Injury Lawyers. Call from anywhere in the state of Nevada. 766-1400 is the number, and you got to dial 775 in the north. Much to get to. A lot of NFL news, rule changes being voted on, tush push, ban, denied, change in the NFL seedings, denied. So we'll get to all that in over the course of the next couple hours. Justin Watkins is here. Griffin's back in the Finley Toyota studios. What's going on, buddy?
Oh, there's a lot of news in the legal sports interaction world, crazy. Especially with college sports and, you know, these rules that are going to change and who's going to enforce the rules and lawsuits. It's
like we're 5 minutes away from getting to, maybe a little longer, 7 minutes away from getting to the Power Four putting out something about some agreement that everyone has to, 70-plus schools have to sign, and then state law. And so that's why you're here. But first, closer to home, you have become, as I call it, the conference chaos insider. I've been watching the Pac-12, Pac-2 plus the Disloyal 5 and Gonzaga, and the fight against the Mountain West Conference for exit and poaching fees.
Yep.
We finally got to these dates of mediation.
Yep.
From what I gather, there's like a massive gag order, confidentiality agreement signed, like do not talk.
Right.
We got anything yet?
Nothing that I see that's like verifiable. I mean, you see the, you know, internet sources saying that they were into mediation late. So let's just like, right. Okay, I'll give some context to that. Let's assume that that's true,
right,
that they were there late. Is that a good sign or a bad sign? Obviously, it's a good sign. You know, if you're making some headway, you continue to talk. If you're not, if you are so far apart, mediation can last 30 minutes. You know, you can go in there and say, oh, that's where you're at, and that's your line in the sand. Like, what are we doing here? Let's leave. That happens all the time. I think you have to assume that there is at least a little momentum towards some resolution because, yes, mediation is confidential. Yes, what happens in there and what is discussed in there is confidential. But if mediation has ended, there's nothing to prevent the parties to say, we are no longer in mediation. And the fact that they're not saying that, you have to assume, means that there are still talks going on. And that's, you know, 2+ days. That's, you know, I would think if there is going to be a resolution to go along with this, this would be weeks long. That's my feeling. There's so many layers to this. Yeah, if the parties were willing to agree upon a number, that could happen quickly. I think that there's more to it than that. There is, okay, we agree upon a number. What about you're not going to poach anymore? You can take this one as a part of the settlement. I think there's a ton to be hashed out between these two conferences that clearly are entrenched in a level of hatred towards each other at this point, that there is a lot of work that needs to be done by attorneys and a mediator to take the emotion out of the room, and that can take some time.
To remind people, Mountain West Conference and the Pac-2 plus the six additions are fighting over like over $100 million.
Yeah, call it $100 million.
We'll say $100 million.
Yeah.
Mediation is completed. Give me best case scenario for the Mountain West.
Oh, well, I mean, I think like a best case scenario is
real. I guess realistic best case scenario. They're not getting all the money.
No.
It is going to court.
Yeah, no way. I think
they're holding steadfast.
I have to believe that if they got half the money, they would consider that a victory.
Okay.
You know, if they got around 50, anywhere in the 50 to 60 range, over 50% of what is claimed, that would be a victory for them.
And you think that allows them to keep Air Force and UNLV?
That's a whole other question.
Or is a UNLV part of it? Because you wet the whistle there a little bit about part of the negotiations and a settlement could be, hey, let us take this school. That school's cost might be very little.
Well, just remember,
I mean, best case scenario is if whatever monies they get, they need to keep UNLV. It's not like the conference isn't dead without it, but I think they already put a money value on UNLV and Air Force being in the conference.
It depends on who's there. You know, that sounds crazy to say. You'd say, well, there's the Pac-12 and there's the Mountain West. Maybe. Is ESPN or Fox Sports there? They both are negotiating TV deals right now.
Okay.
So are they playing mediator and peacemaker, or are they playing divider and conquerors? Or, you know, I don't know. You assume that there's one voice for the Mountain West and one voice for the Pac-12. That may not be true either, right? You might have UNLV saying, you know what? We want our own room, because if we're talking about these numbers in that room, then we've got our own concerns about getting paid what we were promised. And so if they're going to go negotiate all these penalties down to 40 or 50 million, I need to know that we're either getting X amount of dollars of that 50 million, or that I can leave and not pay any exit fee. And that needs to be a part of this, what would be termed at that point, a global settlement, which is inclusive of claims that have not even arisen yet, but could in the future. So I don't know who all the players are in all of the rooms. They've kept a pretty good lid on it, I think, as far as who that is. But I have to think if you're Air Force and you're UNLV, you've got your own room. And if you're the others, you've got your own room too, because you're like, man, we already took a shady deal. And if promises are being made in addition to that deal to UNLV and Air Force to keep them here, and it comes at our expense, like, we need to band together and stand up for ourselves. And, you know, FYI, make sure you're on the horn with Fox to make sure we got some kind of deal if we don't have them, and what that deal would look like. So that's why I say this, if this is actually going to get resolved, this isn't a 2 or 3 dayer. I mean, it's just like a 2 or 3 weeker.
Best case scenario for the Pac-2, eventually whatever, Pac-9, 10, 11 is,
I would small say 20, amount, small, 20 to 30 million.
Small amount of money. Okay.
Yeah.
So they're not holding to the point like, hey, nothing. We're not giving any money.
Well, I mean, the Pac, we got two buckets, right? The exit fees are never going to be zero. Now, traditionally, you've seen when those things are litigated, go down to about 2/3. That's about the average, right? So it's take 17 million times 5 and take 2/3 of that, right? That's sort of that bucket. The poaching fee is a whole nother bucket of 50 million, of which we have no precedent. There's nobody's had a poaching fee before. I think it's duplicative damages. So I think that it's like 2/3 of one and 0 of the other, or you can make the math work in whatever buckets you want. Obviously, if you're the new 5, you say, hey, Pac, pay some of the poaching fee to ease the burden on us for those of us who are paying. Not all of them are paying. And let's give them, you know, 10 million of a poaching fee, and let's give them 20 million of exit fees combined. They get 30 million. So it's not a 0 and you know, 2/3, but essentially it works out to 2/3 of one of those buckets.
Are you amazed by the fact that there are, I think it's a very small group, but there are fans and followers who, like, they love this so much?
I wish, like, I did.
All
didn't.
The numbers and all the legal complications, I'm amazed there's that many people who have made this their thing.
I know, and they're, none of them are good sources. Like, I have to credit both the Mountain West and the Pac-12 in actually keeping these leaks non-existent, because everything that's coming out is only the things they want to come out, and everybody else is then just speculating. All these deadlines that they think have been missed have never been stated by either of the conferences at any time. Like, we are going to tell you what our TV deal is by May 1st. They've never said that. And the media sort of, or the social media sort of interprets words and say, well, we think they need to have it by this date, otherwise the exit fees are going to go up, or this is going to happen. So the deadline has got to be this. So I have to give credit to both conferences. They've kept a very tight lid on all of this, which puts me in a position of saying, like, I have no idea what potential resolution could look like. I think of the media that's reporting on this, I think Wilner and Canzano are some of the more piped in, at least on the Pac-12 side. And they have said that merger has been brought to the table by Mountain West even before they started this with maybe a, like a relegation model. I think that's interesting. You know, like I think it's going to be a tough sell to the five that left. They left for a reason. They left because the bottom of the conference wasn't spending. It wasn't competitive and did not have any TV ratings of their own to prop up the media deal. So I think that that's a tough sell. But just from a big picture standpoint of this wild, wild west of college football right now, having a conference, you know, and bring the AAC into it, right? Now we got a conference of 30-something teams, or about 30 teams, and have a relegation model and a championship model, and revenues are commensurate with where you're at, I think is pretty cool. You know, it rewards the ones who invest in it, who are trying harder, who have the revenue. And but selfishly as a Pac-12, I don't really want to see that. I would want to see UNLV and stop, because I think that that places you in the best position for a super conference of all eight of you getting in to that. You get to 10, 12, 14, it's too many, and it's just going to fracture anyway.
Justin Watkins, so while all this is going on, and you just mentioned that little nugget at the end about super conference, the SEC and the Big Ten are like, what's going on out west? Get out of here. Who cares? I think this move this week is lining up what we've talked about, which is a potential split or like a big 40 or 50. Ross Dellinger writes, in a stunning move, the power conferences have drafted a contract that would bind schools to new enforcement rules and require them to waive the right to sue over decisions. Schools not signing may risk conference eviction. We have about 90 seconds. We'll carry this over. What is going on here? What are they asking schools to sign, first of all?
Yeah, they're asking schools to sign an agreement that says we're going to appoint a CEO, the A4, make the rules. There's going to be a CEO who enforces the rules, basically becomes the commissioner of college football, hands out penalties, is the final say. You waive your trial rights. You go to an arbitration, a compelled arbitration on any appeals. They want the pro model. The problem is they don't, they will not agree that the student athletes are employees, and that is required in the pro model. Collective bargaining is the only reason the pro model works, so they want all the benefits of the pro model without any of the liabilities that are associated with it. And you just look at it from its face, and you're like, first thing, that's an antitrust violation, like right out of the gates. And they think the House settlement is going to protect them from all this stuff, and it's just not true. There's two things that can protect them: federal action or collective bargaining. And I'm pessimistic that they can get federal action. And until and unless they're willing to get collective bargaining, it feels like they haven't learned a dang thing.
Last couple seconds before we go to break, I would assume a lot of state institutions have already passed on the message like this ain't going to work. I mean, there's suggestions like, hey, state laws won't matter. Like, wait, what?
Well, and that's a little bit more complex. I see a lot of fodder on social media that says the agreement says that you will break state law. The state laws that exist right now are enabling in language, meaning it gives a school the right to do something. It doesn't mandate it.
Battleborne Injury Lawyers, Battleborne Broadcast Center. As we continue, we'll get some more details on this power move by the Power Four trying to get schools to sign away their rights.
Live from the Battleborne Broadcast Center, it's Cofield and Company on ESPN Las Vegas and ESPN Reno.
Justin Watkins, Conference Chaos Insider. We need one. And he delivers every time we're together on Wednesdays when we get into this topic. And we've done this topic almost every week for, it seems like, years. And the scenario you were just talking about, where now the Power Fours have put out this threatening deal where, like, everyone better sign or else, the 70-plus schools in the Power Four or else. As you said, it doesn't seem like they're learning a lesson. They're just trying to flex their muscle more. They're in jeopardy of pissing off the judge in the House settlement because she's been working really hard on this, and her reaction to this could be what?
I mean, if I'm her, I'm like, oh, so this is what your plan is if I approve the settlement. you're then going to inflict this future harm because you think you have a get out of jail free card. Remember what this whole, like the House settlement has gone so awry. Remember what this was all about. This is past players saying, you denied me my NIL wrongfully, and you owe me the damages that I would have gotten. That's what this case was about. And then what they did is they said, okay, we think we're probably going to lose that, and it's probably going to be a pretty big number, so we're going to resolve that case, but in as part of that resolution, we want to create a set of rules 10 years into the future that are going to protect us from a future antitrust lawsuit. That's what it was. So they're using their wrong, their wrongful denial of NIL opportunities to a whole class of individuals as a platform to set up rules that would not be enforceable under antitrust law and trying to get the protections of a antitrust lawsuit settlement. It is full of holes because, like the judge pointed out, hey, you're binding some kids that are in middle school right now. And they're like, yeah, they can object. Okay. So now you're just going to be dealing with hundreds or thousands of objectors in this court every single year for 10 years. Then what happens after 10 years? Like, and on top of it, as we've talked about a number of different times, none of this protects anybody from a Title IX lawsuit. And absolutely 100%, the House settlement violates Title IX. It does. There is no reasonable mind, legal minds can differ on that point. It absolutely does. So then you're going to see a bunch of Title IX lawsuits the minute it goes into effect. You're going to see tons of objectors every single year. It's not going to stop antitrust lawsuits that have to deal with things other than NIL, right? Eligibility rules, roster limits, all that stuff. You know, they tried to cram all of those things in there, but anything that's an unfair competition is an antitrust violation with the system that the NCAA has set up. So they're trying to now say, hey, NCAA doesn't even enforce this stuff anymore. It's just going to be the conferences do it on their own. Because the conferences are not the Gestapo. They are not the ones that can violate antitrust. Well, when you collude, then you are de facto the NCAA. You just replaced all the conferences to do the exact same thing. So, right. Like, to me, it's like not only have they not learned anything, they are like doubling down on breaking this system. It is so broken. I've been talking about for 6 months now. Everybody thinks House is the answer to the case.
We're done.
It's worse. It's going to make everything worse. I hope, but I don't think it's going to be the case. I hope she denies the settlement, says it is not fair to all. Let's go to trial, because what will trial result in? Trial will only result in the past harms. It will not affect the future at all. If future players want to bring an NIL action, they can. And guess what? They probably won't be able to, because they're all getting NIL money that they're not entitled to, because these collectives are just paying to play. They're not true NIL contracts. So the future's kind of already taken care of itself. Just pay the kids in the past, and I hope that the College Football Commission comes in and does something about this, because I do think there are federal and state actors that need protection. These state schools and federal schools, don't forget, Navy, Army, right? Like, they're involved in all this stuff too. They don't pay NIL, but they're involved in this. Their students are getting harmed because their institutional leaders believe that paying these athletes is better for the students. I do not believe that that's true. I retweeted a report out there. You got some students that are paying.
This is mind-boggling, because what's happening is, because of the rising cost of keeping up with the Joneses,
yep,
schools are having to then put the cost on the average student.
Yes.
And you sent out a chart at each school how much of their money is given to the university is actually going to athletics. And it is ridiculous. Very few people signed up for this.
Yes.
And also, I don't think a lot of people even understand what's going on. If I read one more, San Diego State fan calling UNLV a poverty school.
Right.
San Diego State is in the hole – massively.
Yep.
And then your chart indicates they're doing what to their students?
Charge them $2,500
per. What does that mean?
That means like each student has an athletic fee in addition to their tuition and books, an athletic fee on there of $2,500. For context, if you're an in-state San Diego State student, right, that's more than 10% of your tuition that you're paying for athletics for them to pay NIL deals to these guys. And again, these NIL deals are fake. They're not real, right? Like, you see very few real ones, right? We saw it with Shedeur Sanders. We saw it with Caitlin Clark afterwards. But when they're with, like, Gatorade or Nike, Caleb Williams had some, right, with Nike. Those are real, right? He's marketable. They see the benefit of it. Right. They hire him. Right. He does a commercial. He gets paid for it. A collective that has no goods or services and pays them is pay for play. That's it. It's not NIL. That's not – people just use this word NIL like it means – oh, that means they get paid. NIL is name, image, likeness. Is this person marketable off the field to a business to help them sell goods and services? Not collectives.
It's so crazy.
It's nuts, and it's ruined. It's ruined. And, you know, I think there's just going to be a lot of people like Charles Barkley who are donors, who are big donors, who are like, wait a minute, I've been given money. There's no end in sight. They don't have a fix to this. And they're just going to keep coming asking me for six or seven figures so this dude can play basketball for them for 1 year and then a roster turnover. He's going to have no loyalty to this school. He's not going to be a future booster like me. You know, he's been one of four schools that he went to. He's not going to care about any of these schools ever again. He's going to get to the pros and move on.
Yeah. San Diego State, for the students there and the parents who are putting out the money, you better go to games and enjoy Magoon Gwath. Their big prize that they're going to get, you know, returning to school after Michigan made a pitch to him, because he's probably getting $700,000-$800,000. It's your money.
Yep.
In a way.
Yeah. Well, no, not in a way. It is your money. Yeah. And you'll see on that chart, the ones who suffer the most are the ones who are, I would say, mid-level teams.
Yep.
In decently good conferences, or at least competitive conferences, who are not good enough to attract the student body to go to games and buy merchandise, what have you. So
I choose, as a student, I choose not to support sports. That's right. I'm not going to the game. And behind the scenes are like, idiot, you're paying for it anyway. You're still getting it.
That's the point, right? Like, I'm a San Diego State student. I don't want to go to the game. They suck. And then you're dinging me for $2,500.
Getting it anyway. You may as well. Well, I mean, this has so many layers. That said, why is ever paying to go to football games?
Right. I never did.
You know what I'm saying?
Did you? It should be free.
You're already taking the money.
I know. The whole university exists based on my tuition. I've already paid it. Let me in.
How many times are you going to dip?
Yeah. Well, Oregon State doesn't.
I don't know the situation with tickets for every school, but lordy, that's crazy.
Yes.
My God. How about that flashy headline that I sent you on the schools, you know, the Power Four schools, Power Four Conference is trying to get all their schools to sign these agreements. Someone said, would the SEC threaten to kick out Tennessee or Vanderbilt for following their own state's law? I know you kind of pushed back on the state law thing. What does that mean?
Yeah, so I would pump the brakes here a little bit, okay, because the state laws that I've seen, and this could change in the future, but the state laws that I've seen so far, the Tennessee law, is enabling in language. It gives options for the school to do certain things without breaking the law. Meaning, like in Tennessee, it says, you can break the NCAA's law and you're okay with us. Well, that doesn't mean you have to. So it gives the school options, but if the school were to sign this agreement, they've elected not to pursue those options. So I see a lot of social media fodder that says, oh, this agreement makes these schools break state law. That's not true. It just limits their options, and they're making a choice not to have the resources available to them under state law, which they have the choice to do because it's optional. So I don't think that's as big of a point right now. Now the question becomes, do some of these state lawmakers make compulsory laws that mandate you pay athletes a certain amount that's in violation of this agreement, what do the schools do then?
Can you think of a state that would do that? That isn't like completely gung-ho behind their school and behind Power Fordham?
Washington and Oregon, right? These schools that have a have and a have not, right? And then what does the state make up of the lawmakers? I don't know.
So one school's right. in, one school's out.
Right.
And then you could have a warring over this, like, hey, this system sucks.
California.
Yeah.
You got four in, one of which is a private institution. So you got three state schools in and what? 50 out? A whole bunch of schools out. And so I don't know. It would be state to state. It would depend on the makeup of that state. You know, how many alumni do you got that are state lawmakers and are going to be on, let's use Oregon as an example, Oregon state side or Oregon side?
Coming up, let's get into what could be a workplace violation, but who violated rules? Is it a WNBA player or her former boss?
Live from the Battleborn Broadcast Center, it's Cofield and Company on ESPN Las Vegas and ESPN Reno.
Always got to have an attorney around, in real life and on Sports Talk Radio. Justin Watkins is here. Here's a crazy one. You know, that poor dude who kind of flipped out of the stands and fell on his head at a Pirates game. Pennsylvania State Police Liquor Control Enforcement has filed two charges against Kaven Markwood, the friend of the guy who fell. Ethan Kirkwood was given alcohol. Whatever. The victim in the fall was 20. His friend is 21. So what's happening here?
So across the nation, there are what called dram shop liability states. And what that means is you can be liable for over-serving somebody or for serving some a minor. Okay, there's two different sort of avenues there. Some states are very restrictive on this. Typically in the Bible Belt, over-serving can be a criminal charge, and you could be responsible civilly for what happens to somebody else that drunk person hurts. So like if you're at a bar, the person, it has to be apparent physically that this person can't function. You continue to serve them. They go get in the car. They drive drunk. They hit and kill somebody. You as the bar owner and the bartender can be responsible for the drunk person's act. That's in about 17 states of the 50. Most states have dram shop liability if you've served a minor. Now, in that case, it doesn't matter that they were physically impaired or not. You serve alcohol to a minor, the minor gets hurt, or the minor hurts somebody else, you can be criminally charged and you can be civilly liable. So the question becomes, hey, does Nevada have that? That's why this, you're reading this headline like, this is incredible. That's actually the majority of the states have that rules.
Really?
Nevada is like the very minor exception, one of seven states that does not have dram shop liability. The only liability that exists in Nevada is a social host. So, of course, not the casinos, nobody on the strip, no bars, nobody who serves alcohol commercially counts under this rule. It's only a social host in their home serves a minor,
Really?
Right? Serves a minor, they can be responsible for what happens to that minor.
Okay.
So that this case could not go forward in Nevada, but in Pennsylvania, absolutely. Like, it's the easiest charge in the world. So, you know, he served it to a minor. Minor got hurt. He's responsible. He's criminally charged, and he could be civilly responsible.
So, example, like Belichick at 69 when he first met Jordan Hudson when she was 19, he serves her drinks at home. She goes out and has an issue. He's in trouble.
In Nevada,
69 and 19.
Yes. In Nevada, yes.
Just tying it all together.
Yep.
I wasn't taking a cheap shot at.
No. Social hosts.
Just tying it all together.
Yeah, I like how you did it.
It's not bad, right? Okay.
Or Jay-Z and Beyonce.
I always like to lean on you for these fight videos that we see out in public. Interesting video that was trending in the MMA world. Dustin Poirier has a brother, Glenn. Glenn works at a pizza place. There's a video of Glenn Poirier and some bigger dude coming over, pushing him to the floor. Some customer has a problem with him. He starts throwing. And Glenn Poirier clearly has trained a little bit, is ducking and slipping and throwing like perfect rights and lefts. Nails him, knocks him out.
Yep.
He's fired. He's getting sued, isn't he?
No, I hope not. You can sue anybody for anything. But I hope that the pizza place doesn't fire him. And I would absolutely 100% not take this case. And I hope nobody else would. Because you know, I always say in these videos, you got to be careful. Context is everything. We need to see what happened before and after and all that. I'm going to make one assumption that Glenn Poirier did not strike this person before the video starts. Okay. When the video starts, Glenn is on his phone. So he is clearly no threat to this person. He's not standing anywhere in, he's 4 or 5 feet away. He's on his phone. The guy comes up to him, pushes him. Glenn still doesn't throw. The guy throws, I'm going to say 2 or 3 punches that Glenn dodges, still has not thrown.
Goes to the floor.
Yes. Goes to the floor on the push, gets up, dodges 2 or 3 punches, throws, I'm going to say 2 or 3 really clean ones, knocks him out. The minute the guy goes down, he stops. He does not do anything extra. He stops. From my perspective, everybody gets scared about being legally responsible for defending yourself. That was perfect, perfect legal self-defense.
Live from the Battleborn Broadcast Center, it's Cofield and Company on ESPN Las Vegas and ESPN Reno.
Wednesday's Mean, Justin Watkins is in. A lot of college sports talk about the legality of what the hell's going on with conference chaos. We just hit on a public fight. Who's in the wrong? Who's in the right? Lawsuits? Maybe not. We're about 3 minutes away from talking about the latest update with John Fisher and his stadium here in Las Vegas. Has there been progress? We'll get to that. But I saw this deal with Sophie Cunningham, who is now with Indiana. So she's getting a lot of attention, right, with the Fever. Are there two lawsuits going back and forth here? The workplace violation with her old boss, Phoenix Suns, Mercury CEO, former, because he's that team got purchased, Josh Bartlestein. What's going on here with this WNBA player?
Yeah, so, I mean, the headlines were made because of the allegation that Cunningham and the CEO were having an affair. But this is not a lawsuit by Cunningham. It has nothing to do with that relationship of itself and the propriety of it or impropriety of it, if it even existed. And I say that, I'll give you a reason why I say even if it existed. The lawsuit is by a former employee who said that when he mentioned the rumors going around that other employees were saying that the CEO and Cunningham were having an affair, the CEO's married and has 2 young children, that he was fired and that it was wrongful termination, it was retaliation. The team has come out very strongly against the attorney and the claimant, but mostly against the attorney, saying this attorney is on probation with the State Bar of Arizona. This attorney has brought at least 6 lawsuits such as these against the organization, all of which have been dropped, kicked out of court, dismissed, or otherwise. We are not going to pay it. This is untrue, and we will not pay a single penny to this person, just like we haven't on these other lawsuits. And the reason why I say if it happened is because you typically do not see this kind of strong out-of-court statement made in defense of a lawsuit with particulars like that if they don't have the goods. And the reason is because any statement you make in court in any filings or what have you is protected from defamation or libel. You cannot be sued for something you say in court. You can be sued for something that you say out of court, which is typically why they say no comment. You can, you know, basically read our court filings. Or you'll see something along the lines of a press conference that says, as you will see in our court papers, we have stated this. That is their protections. That what they came out with today, they haven't even appeared in the lawsuit yet. They are firing before they've even done any filings. So they don't even have the protections of libel or slander in or defamation in those statements. So you know they have to be dialed in. So I will be interesting to follow this. But unless the plaintiff has got some goods, there'll be some discovery, I guess, and we'll see what happens. But according to the team, this attorney's, you know, basically 0 for 6, and they're looking to make her 0 for 7.
Sophie Cunningham had a statement today. She said, quote, "I'm deeply saddened by the recent false allegations made against me, calls the claims, quote, untrue and extremely hurtful."
There you go. I mean, she she'll be a witness, right? She'll be a witness if the case moves forward, and she'll have to testify, and she'll have to give her story on whatever they think happened or didn't happen. And so it's not exactly going to go away for her. But, you know, the first thing I thought is, man, if the Fever didn't already have enough media buzz, now right? They have it all. Like, well, it's interesting, right?
On social media, on TikTok especially.
Yeah.
It's just, she did it. She was doinking the boss. Right. So people just run with it. Okay, latest update on A Stadium. It is, what, May 21st? I mean, I think it was supposed to be started up here in June. I think they put porta-potties in, so there's some movement there. John Fisher told one of the local TV stations, quote, "True groundbreaking started with the implosion of the Tropicana Hotel that took place last November. We're moving dirt right now, and we'll continue to do that with the expectation to start construction mid-year." An SI writer said, well, this is kind of creative languaging here. The RJ said the A's filed for a commercial grading permit this week with Clark County, which when issued would allow the site prep to go ahead of construction to occur. When the process begins, that is effectively the groundbreaking on the project. What's going on here?
I mean, groundbreaking is a term of art, right? But it's generally understood of that's when all the politicians line up. They get their, you know, golden or in the Raiders situation, silver shovels, right? And they stick it in the ground. That's after grading when you were going to start the building improvement permit, like going vertical, right? Like, you never see them out there with like rocks and desert and sagebrush going, we're about to grade this, and they stick their shovel in. So groundbreaking is like whatever it is. I think it's hilarious to say groundbreaking started when the implosion of the Tropicana. You didn't even own the Tropicana. That's got nothing to do with you. I mean, I know you're going to go on part of that site, but that was going to happen anyway. They want to put a new hotel there. So it's just funny to move the goalposts. They say, and the expectation is that we will begin construction in mid-year. So again, a lot of, you know, room in that language for it to what does construction mean? Now, next thing you know, you're going to know and be like, well, as part of the grading, you know, we put in the ground some steel and some concrete. So, like, construction has already begun, guys. Like, we've already been doing it. I don't know. I mean, it's just, like, right out of the Fisher playbook.
Justin Watkins with Cofield. So, we think that Fisher was shopping around the team and was trying to pitch a valuation of a certain amount. Hey, this is what the team's going to be worth in Las Vegas. Buy into it. Doesn't look like you got any buyers at the current valuation. Valuation's a very interesting thing. The Niners and Chargers just sold off small stakes of their team. I read it as, well, okay, here we go, right? Hedge funds, equity firms. David Sampson used to work for the Marlins, now does stuff on his own. He's got his podcast. Does a great job, by the way. His page is amazing, and he covers all different things. He spoke about the Niners and how they sold off part of the team. This is pretty interesting.
They are selling 6% of their team to a bunch of people. And what's crazy about it is that they found a way to take money off the table without bringing in PE money, without bringing in foreign money. They found a bunch of families who were like, this seems like a great idea. And they did it at a value of $8.5 billion. Because while I don't pay attention to Forbes at all, Sportico, they all come up with valuations to franchises based on information they think they have, which they don't, all of which is fine. They valued the Niners at about $6.5 billion.
Okay.
All right.
Wait, how does that work?
I mean, you know, it's funny. You know, he says, we've got a bunch of families to get together to buy up this piece. It's not private equity. Well, that it is sort of the definition of private equity, right? It's people who are buying in that are not a part of a business. They are a collective of individuals. So whether they got together and put money together to get 6%, or they all bought their own percent or half percent here, I mean, that's sort of semantics to me. And I guess the valuation is, whatever you could sell it for, right? I mean, if you could sell it for... Now, the Raiders did the opposite, right? They sort of went under valuation to sell to people that they wanted to be part of the organization, Tom Brady and the others. You know, they wanted their voices in the room. This is the opposite. Wait, if they're going to pay me like this valuation is $8.5 billion and we think it's $7 billion and I don't have to let them in the room and I don't have to hear anything they have to say, you know, they just get season tickets for it and they get to have an owner's box. Great. All right, we'll do that. You know, sounds like a good deal. I'm improving my valuation by doing that.
Yeah, Andrew Brand, who used to work for the Packers, said liquidating hundreds of millions of dollars without giving up an ounce of control. Incredible business.
Yeah, sure. But it's also, it's like buying stock, right? None of these valuations of these franchises has ever gone down, absent the lockout of the NHL for a little bit, but they've all recovered. They're all worth hundreds of millions, if not billions of dollars, you know, especially in the NFL. It's never gone down. So if you're, you know, a family, let's say you got a dynasty trust, you know, and you as the family are like, what are we going to invest in? Hey, we got a chance to buy a part of the Niners. That seems cool. Let's do that. I mean, pretty safe that we're not going to lose money on it, even if we're buying it over valuation right now. If we have no intent to sell in the next 10 years, the valuation will be profit generating. Will it be 10, 20, 30% profit? I don't know. But I would feel pretty confident if you knew you were going to hold that percentage for at least 10 years, that even if you bought it overvalued, that you're going to get a return on your investment.
Breaking news in. I got to get your reaction on this because it's one of the topics we love to discuss in August. I get crazy. I watch football documentary and I start saying, as I say every year, I want the radio station to run like a football team. Let's go. The NFL slipped something by us and never announced it. So last year they had the Bears and we had a lot to say. And you were right. Eberflus was a clown. I fell for his nice hair. But, you know, they've always had these losing teams. And it's like at some point people are like, eh, like, is it really that interesting? Like, I thought the Browns would be an obvious candidate. Once through, in the dark of the night is, oh, now there's no more playoff team rule anymore. So Hard Knocks this year is going to have the Bills.
Yep.
What do you think?
I like it.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think it's going to be great. I mean, I think it's, you know, good to pursue a team that's going to be competitive. That's going to be good. You know, I was listening to a segment with Rosh before I got in here. I will jump back into one of the other things that didn't go through that you were talking about, the tush push. And I thought you made the best point, and I can't believe it hasn't been discussed, of like, hey, let's just get back to the situation where you can't push an offensive player, right? If I'm a defense and I push them back, they get forward progress. Why do they get the benefit of pushing forward, yeah, right? Like, no push either way. One-on-one, hey, if you run through the guy, great. If you get stopped, then that's it. I think that would eliminate a lot of the tush push, but would still allow quarterback sneaks. So that's the news of the day that actually got me more than Hard Knocks and the Bills. It will be interesting to me to see what Josh Allen's really like, because he is pretty, I think, demurred in his public perception. He does all these great things. He's a nice guy. He's got a famous girlfriend, but he's pretty reserved, I feel like, to the media. It'll be interesting to see if we get a picture of what he's like with his teammates.
It's really smart by the NFL, too.
Mm-hmm.
They have a new stadium on the way. So this is the last year of the Ralph. Why not feature some of the craziest fans, too?
For
sure. And the other thing is, I don't know anything about Buffalo.
Right.
I have never been there. I'm not going to say I never want to go there. I don't see having a level of independent, you know, wealth where I can vacation in Buffalo. So I know it sounds stupid, but getting to see, there are a lot of places I go to. I'm very lucky in my sports travels that I've never been to before. Like this year, I'm probably, I don't know, it's gonna be interesting going to you know, see Miami of Ohio. You know what I mean? Like, I get a kick out of that.
Yep.
And sometimes I'm surprised the country will get to see Buffalo. I'm sure there's some people right now who are like, yeah, bro, I really don't want to focus on Buffalo, but that's kind of a cool element of it too.
100% agree. I want to see that too. You know, like, they've got these diehard fans that are with the Bills and the Sabres, right? You know, if I had an opportunity, I'd go over there and catch a game for both too.
And how about we finally get an angle instead of, you know, rebuilding, gritty, down team, oh, it's tough. Like, Super Bowl or bust, man. Expectations. Yep. Like, McDermott doesn't get it this year. Get it done this year, and Josh Allen falls short again. Like, that's a cool preseason. All right, we're up against it. Appreciate it. Thank you, Justin. 766-1400. Call from anywhere in the state of Nevada. Battleborne Injury Lawyers.